concierge.
Laura and I visited the Upper Paleolithic caves in the Dordogne. This last year, and the vision of the paintings and the art in these caves, some of which go back 40,000 years, is absolutely stunning. Think about it, it was a time of great optimism. There seemed to be no barriers, no limits to what we could do. There were great herds of magnificent animals. And I was originally going to talk about Lake Lahontan. And that's this place here. And speaking of great animals, the largest mammoth fossil found in North America, I believe, was found right up here on the hillside. 8,000 years ago, there were about 400 or 500 feet of water over us. Lake Lahontan was part of a series of interlocking lakes with narrow passageways, mostly running north and south for 300 miles. And a lot more rain, and a lot of people. Out here in the desert, if you look at the alluvial fans, there are shards, broken points, flakes, everywhere you look. We are right now in a period of temporary drought. And which I will get back to. I'm working on a book that's going to explain that. It's called The Great Bay, California After the Collapse, and the Sacramento Valley fills with water and is a great bay, 300 miles long. The way to cross is on catamarans. And this all fills again.
No more birding now?
On pontoons.
So, at we came up with a song a couple years ago at Oracular Madness that goes, Grandfather, grandfather, I had a dream. Grandfather, tell me what it means. I saw dust in the waters of Lake Lahontan. Grandfather, I had a dream. Tell me what it means. I saw people. I saw lights in the waters of Lake Lahontan. And that's going to get me into what I'm going to start was Eric mentioned in his wonderful talk on Wallace Stevens, the pathetic fallacy. The pathetic fallacy. Is Eric? I don't know. I'm not sure who coined it. I think that came from the New Critics. And the pathetic fallacy is basically when you ascribe human emotions to, quote, inanimate
things. It's from the Freudian,
things.
Isn't it?
Well, that would be the New Critics.
Okay.
Like the angry sky. It's very pathetic. The sky is not actually angry. It's the poet that does that. But let's look at this a little bit further. Underneath this put-down is an assumption that there is an objective material reality separate from the perceiver. Some good philosophers, Bishop Berkeley among them, maintained that this was not so. The Buddhists maintain this is not so, that there is a connection. So we're going to do some exercises with the poetic fallacy used in an intentional way. And in particular, I want to go further in the first poem that I'm going to read. The pathetic fallacy is not enough for me, so I invoke what I'm calling the cosmic fallacy. And that says that there is a connection between things. That helping somebody, passing something on, gifting somebody. There was a phrase in the 60s. Pass it on. If you needed something, you asked for something, and I'll pay you back, I pay you. And he says, no, just pass it on. That in such an act, the universe is changed. That's an alternative, magical axiom, a poetic axiom. And we might call it the beauty way, the way of walking in grace. And one of the things I love about Burning Man is the gifting. And it's actually the way human beings have lived through most of our existence. All of our prehistory, exchanging, gifting. It was a gift economy. Again, in a temporary period of drought that likes to call itself civilization, characterized, if you think about it, by standing armies, slavery in various forms, writing a bunch of scribes, invented that, to keep track of taxes. Boot-licking poets to write praises for the kings and the warriors. A temporary blip, an anomaly in our history, causing great pain and damage on the earth, but not our only alternative. And I'm going to talk more about that at Entheon Village on Friday, and I'm going to talk about what I call horizon anarchism. It's a ways off, but it's better to have it on the horizon, just to know, just knowing where we want to get to is half of it. All right, so I'm going to invoke the cosmic fallacy, and this is a plant collector's poem called Last Specimen, and field botanists take these plant presses out with them and rip up plants, press them flat. It's kind of like stamp collecting, but, you know, bigger. Last specimen. In the bank of a gravelly wash, a mile from the road, in Saline Valley, I found a desert paintbrush. Not a rare plant. Just one I didn't have in my collection. The brilliant scarlet-tipped bracts of the inflorescence were still and folded. Kneeling down, I gently pulled them open to inspect the corolla, then saw, still a child. It's not that anyone else would come by here, that you live to blossom alone here, beneath an empty sky, means that somewhere a soldier won't die. Or that on a dry planet, somewhere in Cygnus, it will rain. I returned with an empty press. Laura's going to continue. We're just going to trade a couple of poems back and forth here.
Dialogue. A quiet, compact body, well-worn, worn out. The tea drunk too fast, burning your tongue. The belly pain that reminds you your mother is dead. The curb that defines the sidewalk, that defines the street, the leaves of the tree, the bark of the trunk, the insects inside. the voice of hell, quiet as a tree in the middle of a field, the field of purple loosestrife, waiting for wind, the first maple to turn in early August. The smell of sage covering the hillside. The ledge of rock, summer covered with hail, the snowflake mitten caught that does not melt, the pelican, salty water in its beak, the lake that is dry, waiting for rain. The sound of water, where water does not run. The wind that sings the dream of rocks.
The point here underlined is that the great shield of poetry, which allows us to invoke metaphor, thereby can give a more complete description. That's our wager. I started in physics, which I liked because of equations of power, but they'll never get there. They'll never get there. Okay. Hiking in Death Valley. We're going on a we're on a dry run here.
Nice.
Two large black carpenter bees began circling my face. I waved them away. They persisted, circling for some distance. Then I remembered a friend had told me that black flies or bees buzzing bonnet or hat may be old friends, long dead. So I said hello. The bees answered. Well, about time. We were thinking that staff of yours might be just a walking stick, after all. How are things in the neighborhood? I asked. The bees answered that they had been experiencing a period of temporary drought for the last 4,000 years. All of the people who used to talk to us are gone. Can you help? I answered that my people were putting clouds into the air as quickly as they could. Though without consulting you, I'm afraid. That is probably not good, they answered. The proper way to attract rain is with a song. Teach it to me, I said. Buzz, 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 pitter, patter, pitter, patter. Buzz, 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 pitter, patter, pitter, patter. I like that, I said. But, my friends and I are going to be back here a few more days. Maybe you guys could hold off for a while. The bees sped off and spat. That stick of yours is once again a walking stick merely. Try again in another 1,000 years, if you live that long.
So what we're doing here is something that we sometimes do at home just for fun, where one of us reads a poem and then the other one has to find a poem that somehow jumps off of the previous poem. So I have a poem called Death Valley. So I'm going to read that. It's a little on the long side. Enter here. Dusk inside Death Valley, inside ourselves. Walking up canyon, one breath to dinner. Camp in the dark of desert, night falling. Each day, listen to Juan May's poems, then walk, one line, apart, together. The same path diverges, returns to itself, a confluence of bodies, one breath. And this road is long and endless, behind me, before me, and where I am right now. One stream crossing, another stream crossing. I've lost count. sometimes alone, or other times songs. Behind me, songs. This landscape so unanticipated. Cottonwoods, springs, mountains, sand that is not sandy. And all day yesterday, the world sparkling, even though I was tired, even though my feet complained as if I were walking on myself. And this morning, look, a dung beetle, just like a chunk of jet black coal, crawls from its sandy hole, greets the day, just like me. And when we are walking, no rush, destination unknown, you do not need to know where you might get to. There is just the going. Up the hill and across the ridge, a great wind takes us. On this ridge, can we fly without wings? I think so. Then field of saffron desert daisies brush us. Laters, two rattlers embrace, intertwined like filaments of thread, diamondback rope, one pulling the other upslope. We gather to watch. The red tails dance above us. All these things. Soft sand underfoot and the rocky parts are where it is hard as masoned cement. And when you ask, the answer held gently in your heart. Let it bloom like the after ember in a circle of flame. Even the night's rain will not douse. My heart, always open now, never alone. You are with me. You have always been with me. Why is this a surprise? One hand on my heart, the other in yours. Listen for the owl in the early hours of morning. We are sand walking, stone walking, sun walking, water walking.
Beautiful.
Go for it, baby.
Okay. I'm going to go back to the Dordogne Caves. Which are these fantastic limestone caves. And some of the paintings are a couple of kilometers in the cave, where places you had to crawl or squeeze through to get into these rooms. These weren't places that they lived. In some cases, they had to build scaffolding. And these are not small paintings like you would paint in a, you know, on an easel. They would, you know, span across, you know, big life-size woolly rhinoceros, woolly mammoth, and megalosaurus, and horses. They loved horses. There's one with horses. It's like a panel, and the horses, you can see that they're swimming across a stream. By the way, these were deer. By the way, they're holding their heads up. Just see a whole herd kind of swimming across. Okay, so what I do, I push the pathetic fallacy to some new extremes here and fuck with time a little bit to get closer to the truth. The Dordogne Caves. When we emerged, the forests were gone. It was snowing. Pyramid ruins of cities still stood in the south. Maxim guns rusted in a pile. With fire drill, fuel scarce, that night we huddled. Waited 500 years for the salmon, 1,000 for elk. No one saw any bear. The girls found blossoming heather. Singing, cast bells to the river. Some told stories. Reindeer, horn-eared, heard their names, returned. Things got better. Then it warmed. Green fog spilled through the passes. We ate hazelnuts. Spruce needles woke our feet, and we followed the loons north. Bison bellowed where our dreams had left them, like a song. Corked in a bottle. The horses found the flint, watched us flaking, eyes unblinking, seemed to know what was next. Someone thought we should leave out a bowl of porridge. I couldn't sleep. Called to calcite and syrinx. Shards cut my tongue. I cut a brush and ground ochre.
To make music, one must assemble the verdant green from a leaf, carnelian and ochre from flowers, the weight of stones, the invisible. One must learn to listen for songs, the rhythm of ocean as it takes the shore, the sizzle of wood song seized by flame. Gather these like shells or paper clips. Create a mosaic, understanding the framework. Silence the unexpected grout.
What do you think? One more?
I want to read one more.
Oh, please, more. That's good.
I want to read a little more.
Okay. Okay, so I'm going to read something from my new book, The Great Bay, California After the Collapse. It's wonderful. I have a large time span. It starts, the first decade begins in, well, I put it now in 2017. I had it 2013, but Leslie thought that wasn't quite enough time.
It all depends on
so he gave you 4 years.
Yeah, we gave four extra years. The interesting thing is I found out that Jack London wrote science fiction, and it's a story about the collapse, and he has it in 2017. It's spooky, a little spooky. Okay, so, and then, you know, so I look at after 10 years, and, you know, almost everybody dies. It's after killing off the first 100 million, it got really easy.
The first million is always the hardest.
Yeah.
What kind of numbers?
And it gets hot. Well, the population finally gets down to about 2% of its present population.
World's population? Or
what would that be? What would
all
that
over
be?
The world. It's a worldwide plague.
120 million.
120 million.
A biological weapon that gets loose. Anyway, way in the future, this will be, you know, 500, 1,000, you know, people settle into a different way of life. And this is from, there's a tribe that, they grow harmel, like it grows not too far from here, actually. And they mix it up with these other grasses in a circular ceremony to invoke spirits who then speak to them and give them messages. And one in particular, one man is particularly possessed. The condor spirit song. They have murdered my children. They set fire to my earth. They enslave my sisters. They silenced my chorus of frogs. They would not listen to my waterfalls. They ignored my council of bees and stole fire from my volcano. They poisoned the one who eats death. And now the bodies pile. I shall send earthquakes and plagues and withhold my tears. All existence is without foundation, yet they scribble their names in my sky. They have bombed my temples and cut my groves. They have twisted the courage of youth and set them against each other. Why do they hunt my lions? What have they done to my corn? They were blind to my dust and loosed sand in my pastures. They imprisoned my rivers and salted my fields. They suck my black blood and spill red in return. No one can save their children from death. Why are they still so arrogant? I will send earthquakes and plagues. I shall withhold my tears. Then she cried. working after that.
Then, for Madame Brooke, the Blue Lady.
The Blue Lady.
Yeah.
I'm going to read a poem about a dream. Because we were talking about sleeping and dreaming and how important that is for a lot of us as a kind of a renewal. It was a strange dream about a body of water on a continent the size of Greenland. On the map you could see it was quite large, but when you stepped through the map and into the water, it was more like a lake or even a big pond or a huge swimming hole, very deep, almost black, blue, especially at the end, where there was a steep cliff. And in this body of water was a whale. And you swam with the whale, and there was a wager. But the thing wagered was never mentioned, except that the wager was a dime, and that somehow that was significant. Of course, when I woke up, it made no sense, the large body of water, the wager, the whale, the dime. All day long, it came back to me. Still, in that body of water swimming with that whale, and I could feel a tightness in my chest, something stuck in the back of my throat.
You read anything else?
I want to read the gratitude poem.
Okay.
You want me to do that first?
Why don't you do that first, then I'll close it.
Okay. So this is a poem that I call Ingratitude, and it's actually in honor of Albert Hofmann. The gold film that washes across vision, that shimmers, that swims across time, whispers or shouts, the only language, oh, carillon of color, spinning, swirling, across the ceiling of infinity with the geometric precision of ancient Arabian cupolas, crescents, squares, and triangles, all iridescence and incense. Space roils around us, billowing of howls and exclamations of rainbow, premonitions of the sacrament of bedlam and insight, both amplitudes and maxitudes, wonderments and wows. Whirring extremities of shapeshifters, rosewood and cordwood and myrrh, and waves of time sense, thickened and spherical, swelling and thrusting and white-capped, the blinding broth of formidable horizon. Then finally, the sunrise, well-traveled and bright, binding in its innocence, cruising and actual, precarious, and enough. I am drowsy, irrational, sated by the sheer beauty of the earth, birdsong and wonder, all that green, the long spill into you, the long spill, everything still a sparkle, rippling and lyrical, relinquished, remembering, festooned in mirth, scattered and gleaming, miseries, unfamiliar, at least for this day. This life, conjectured, imagined, the illusion, complete, so sweet.
I wrote a line in Pharmacognosis, kind of playfully. Saying, while some study enlightenment, we on the poison patch study illusion. And that, so our review in Shaman Drum called me up and goes, I study illusion while we study powers and healing allies and
la-di-da.
What can I do?
I just wondered if that guy could read. Apparently doesn't understand.
It wasn't too bad, actually. He just missed the irony at a couple points. I have a new book that's going to come out in December about Burning Man called Inspired Madness. unless, you know, in the next couple, I walk in fear that I will discover this being here now, and it kind of being too late almost to change the text, which is already, you know,
being typeset as you sit here.
Oh fuck, I got it wrong.
Of course you did. That's the point.
Yeah, it's all right. Dale.
Well, anyway, there's if you want one of these, I kind of hand
it. But Dale, you get it wrong with style. That's what's really important.
There's some fun stories in there I think you'll like. And I talk about potlatch and wasteful, the importance of wasteful consumption in a sacred way. It could save us all.
Yeah.
That's our wager. We can't prove that.
That's, yeah. Exactly.
All right. So I'm going to close with, this is, again, about 500 years in the future, and a lovely woman with two husbands named Heather.
Both of her husbands are named Heather?
Heather.
But both of her husbands are named Heather.
No, no, no.
I know, but a lovely woman with two husbands named Heather.
Okay, I know. Okay.
She's an
You're
editor,
right.
So just sets her off.
Heather's charming song.
He'll be back later.
Uh-huh. Promises.
She sings. And that kind of makes everything okay. She's a master of singing magic. Keeping everything loving, cooperative, working together. It's true magic. To the water I go, to the deep green bay. I call all good things for your nets. To the dragonflies I go, their wings bright in the sun. I call on their web for your nets. To the stones I go, curved stones in the creek. I go to find weights for your nets. To my bean plants I go, my tall twining beans. I sing to find knots for your nets. To my hair I call, to my long flowing hair. I give it to you for your nets.
And we would like also to invite you to come in the evenings next door where we do improv,
it's hard to know.
Who knows, improv music, spoken word, blah, 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 but you're all welcome.
Next door. What time do you, all night, anytime?
It's really hard to know.
What next door
is it happening? Hence the improv.
We will be there this,
in this
tie-dyed pair. We'll be there this evening.
We call it the Oraculon.
We're going to take a brief break at about 11:15 because our dear friend Jacob is going to be playing.
Oh, you're going to be
Jacob is playing psychedelic juice harp
over
tonight
at Entheon Village right after Alex Ray finishes
great
his presentation.
So we're going to go here.
So we're going to take
that
a break. Go
but
hear
we,
Jacob,
but we,
and then
we may be here before or after. It's, you know, if anybody can still crawl around.
So.
Not otherwise.
But we're there pretty much in the evening.
Thank you
Thanks,
very much.
Guys.
Very much.
Thank
okay,
you.
So tomorrow, 3:00, Peggy Nelson will discuss her flyer artwork, which is a really fun piece about MP3 players that you carry around with you on the fly and fuck up your experience. Then John Hanna and Sylvia Tyson will be talking about entheogenic issues and the future of all this. Then we're going to have a panel and everyone that we can possibly grab camp who does entheogen work will probably be dragged onto the panel for a lot of back and forth, and then I will close with the future of all. So hopefully we'll see you tomorrow, 3 p.m. Thank you very much.
Woo-hoo! Thank you, Mark.
Enjoy your
Columbus.